You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, third hour of Wake Up Tucson. Let's see, I got to look this up. Before we get the East Coast done, and I got to look this up. Now, first and foremost, one of our sources at the White House this morning, when Biden was notified by some NSA folks that they killed a leader of ISIS, his response was, "ISIS? Why would we kill her? She's my favorite stripper." Oh, ba-dum-bum. Sorry. Amazon. Thank you. Let's go to Amazon and basic economics. Now, if you gave a, you know, I don't know how many of the local people would read that, right? But they should. Now, you'll like the Cunningham. You'll like it. It doesn't have math in it. Okay, it's just words and pictures. No, you don't color it. Okay. All right. So, hardcover basic economics by Thomas Sowell is let's see. $25. Okay. You can get it. If you're an Audible subscriber on Amazon, it's free. You can listen to it. Well, that's nice. So anyway, I'm just telling you, this is when you hear these people go, "I can't believe how expensive things are in Tucson." Supply and demand. Florette. It's not that hard.
12 years of waking Tucson up, and people are still wondering.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. They got Kardashian and Today shows to watch. Very important. Let's go to frequent contributor of the show, East Side Don. Don, good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the air. I appreciate it.
Now, Don, from what I've listened and read of Don's work in the past, he understands supply and demand. So the city, if you want to have a supply and demand guy, I'm going to rep him. You only have to pay him $10,000 a month, which is cheap, and he will be your supply and demand guru. Don, will you be willing to do that as a side gig?
Of course. Anything to help the city get better.
Good man. Good man. Now, Don's real name is are we allowed to reveal your real name for the book?
Yes. Okay. Yes, of course.
All right. So Donald Smith is his real name. And what's the name of this book, young man?
The name of the book is Steinstucken, A Little Pocket of Freedom. It's about a German neighborhood, and the name of the neighborhood is Steinstucken. It's German for stone pieces.
And what part of Germany is Steinstucken?
It is a neighborhood of Berlin. And during the Cold War, it found itself in a really unique situation. And a whole bunch of interesting things happened to that particular neighborhood. A bunch of things happened to the Americans that were responsible for protecting that neighborhood. And the book is about the various the experiences the neighborhood had, the challenges the Americans had, and also the challenges that the people who lived in the neighborhood had just trying to live a normal life in the middle of the Cold War.
So, Don, we haven't had this conversation. Is this your first book?
Yes.
So talk about the journey to writing a book and Steinstucken have, how did it get on your radar?
Well, I was stationed in Germany from 1986 to 1989, and that was the end of the Cold War. Visited Berlin several times, and while I was in Berlin once, I went to this one neighborhood that it was part of the American sector of Berlin, and for going back into Cold War history, the city of Berlin was split up into occupation sectors after World War II. There was a Soviet sector, there was an American sector, a British sector, and a French sector. And so this neighborhood was part of the American sector of Berlin, but it wasn't physically attached to Berlin. There was about a kilometer's worth of territory in between this neighborhood and the outskirts of the city of Berlin. And that territory was controlled by the Soviet Union. It was part of the German state of Brandenburg that was part of the Soviet occupation zone. So when the Cold War started, the Americans found themselves with a neighborhood that they were responsible to protect, but they couldn't drive to it. They couldn't fly to it, or they couldn't send ground vehicles to it. The West Berlin police couldn't get out there. Yet for 20 years, the Americans managed to keep this neighborhood safe and out of communist hands, even though the communists tried to take the neighborhood several times. And so when you think about the situation, it's an extraordinary situation. A whole lot of things occurred as a result of that. And I thought it was good material for a book. So I'm a history major, so I'd always wanted to write a history book. And I found out that this subject had not been covered fully in the English language. There's a good German book on Steinstucken, but not one in the English language. So I reached out to the residents of the neighborhood, introduced myself, said, hey, I'd like to write a book about you. They said, that's great, because those of us that remember the Cold War period, we're starting to die off. We'd like our stories to be recorded. And we'd also like to help people remember the strong partnership that Americans and Germans had during the Cold War. And this neighborhood was a symbol of that. So there were a lot of good reasons to write the book, so I wrote it.
Did you fly over there and talk to the people?
No, actually, I didn't have to because of the internet, and also I was able to Zoom with them, and there were a fair number of, there are some Steinstucken residents that live in the United States now, so I was able to interview them. There are a lot of American servicemen who served there that I was able to talk to, and I was able to conduct Zoom conversations with some of the Steinstucken residents, some of whom spoke English, because I don't speak German well enough to interview Germans. And I was also fortunate in the fact that a lot of the archives from the 50s, 60s, 70s have now been declassified, and they're available at the National Archives in Washington, or they're available online. And I was able to read a lot about, not only about this neighborhood, but also about why the neighborhood was important. I mean, the neighborhood itself was strategically insignificant. It had less than 200 people in it. The place didn't even have a gas station or a school. It was what we considered to be a bedroom community. But because Cold War Berlin was such a hot spot, everybody was sensitive to how the Americans handled West Berlin. And the West Germans and West Berliners were especially concerned that as the Cold War went on, the Americans would lose interest in Berlin. We'd get more interested in places like Vietnam and Korea. And so they were very sensitive for any signs that the Americans were losing interest in supporting Berlin. So all the Berliners knew about this little neighborhood that the Americans were responsible for. And so they were very keen to watch how the Americans handled that neighborhood. I think we've all heard the phrase, a canary in a coal mine. Well, the idea that a lot of West Berliners had was that if the Americans didn't protect this neighborhood, even though it was really hard for them to do it, that might be a sign that the Americans were losing interest in Berlin. And the Americans were very aware of that. So even though the neighborhood itself was not important strategically, for PR purposes and morale purposes, it was a big deal.
So let me ask this. We don't want people to buy the book. We don't want to give too much away of the secret sauce, as we say. So we just want
to... Don't worry. There's plenty of stuff in there. Plenty of stuff I can talk about. And
so here's my last question for you. We keep, especially in the last 25 months... We throw around a lot of words are being thrown around that we've been taking for granted for years, and one is freedom. So you wrote this book, and it says, you know, Steinstucken, a little pocket of freedom. Right. So what about freedom and the concept of in this book from something that happened 50, 60 years ago? How is that relevant or even more relevant today in America of 2022?
Well, some of the lessons that I would take from that is that, first, this is an example of where America did the right thing instead of the easy thing. In 1951, the East German government tried to take the neighborhood back over. And they made a common sense argument. They said, look, there is no physical connection between this neighborhood and the city of Berlin. There's less than 200 people there. Let us absorb this place. But the Americans stood on principle. Now, admittedly, there were some common sense reasons for them defending the neighborhood. They recognized it would be a PR black eye for them if they gave it up. But at the same time, the Americans said, look, there was a principle here that we're supporting. We agreed to defend those parts of Berlin that are part of the American sector, and legally this neighborhood is part of the American sector. And so the Americans reinforced the agreement. They didn't take the easy way out there. And the Soviets, to their credit, recognized that they had made an agreement with the Americans, and they agreed to abide by it. So for 20 years, this neighborhood that everybody agreed was just a Cold War anomaly managed to flourish and prosper. And another message that I'd like to get out is that the people in the neighborhood, they trusted the Americans, and they put themselves at risk time and time again to stand up to communist provocations. And the communists, and just so people know, there was no wall around this neighborhood at the time. For about at least 10 years, the East Germans could have walked into the neighborhood at any time and taken away anybody that they wanted to, and there would have been no time for the Americans to respond. By the time the Americans heard something about it and raised a protest, those people would have been gone. And anybody who knows anything about Cold War Berlin know that people disappear from West Berlin all the time. Well, these people understood that, yet they trusted the Americans enough that they were willing to stand up to the communists and not back down. So when the communists told them that they should become part of East Germany, when they told them they should accept East Berlin identity cards, the people resisted. And they did it for over 20 years, and they still managed to live relatively normal lives. So it was a really unique situation. So I guess the messages that I would want people to take away from this is that primarily to remember a time when the Germans and the Americans had a strong partnership. And I think that partnership is kind of eroding right now because the Cold War has been over for 30 years. But during that time period, you had a situation. The Cold War was very personal in this neighborhood. This wasn't a situation where Kennedy was squaring off with Khrushchev or the U.S. Army was squaring off with the Soviet Army. You had average, everyday Berliners who were living with East German guards around them all the time. And yet, at the individual level, they managed to work it out. And the people in the village managed to live a relatively normal life. And at the same time, the Americans and the Soviets managed to handle all the various problems that arose because nobody wanted anything to get out of hand. Everybody realized it was a difficult situation, and they made the best of it. And so I know that's kind of a roundabout answer.
That's all right. That's okay. Well, yeah. we want people to go buy the book. It's on Amazon right now. Mm-hmm. And is that the only other place to buy it, or
I have a website that talks more about the book and explains more about the Steinstuckian situation because, admittedly, it's a unique situation. And the website's name is steinpocket.com. So Stein as in beer Stein, and then the word pocket.
Awesome.
So steinpocket.com. And there's a link to Amazon on there. And if you go to Amazon, I know it's kind of hard to remember the name Steinstuckian because of the way it's spelled. But if you type in if you go into Amazon and if you type in the phrase "a little pocket of freedom," the page will come up, and my book is like the third one down.
Awesome. Actually, I started putting the word Steinstuckian in, and by the time I got halfway through the word, it popped up Steinstuckian and
yeah,
pocket of freedom
right.
on the search. So, well, congratulations.
Actually, if you type in Stein and then the letters ST, then the word pops up.
Awesome. Well, congratulations on the book, man. Love it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for giving me a chance to talk about it.
Not a problem. We'll do it again one day.
All right. I'll send you the link to it.
Awesome. Thank you, my friend.
All right. Thank you.
There he is, Eastside Don. The new book is called Steinstuhlken, A Little Pocket of Freedom. My fellow Goomba, Joe Satriani, little Ice Nine on a cold morning. Wake up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. Local news and talk.
And Mr. DeSimone, you might ask why Waylon Jennings is on. Waylon gave up a seat on the plane the day the music died.
Oh, that's true. That's true. You're on the Wake Up Tucson show, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Chris King's coming up next with a Vail school parent. We're going to talk about a interesting, weird situation before it's all over. Thanks to Eastside Don, Donald Smith, and his book, Steinstuhlken, The Little Pocket of Freedom. Love it. So one of our listeners, Mike, sent me a text message that said, well, the average rent for a two-bedroom apartment in Phoenix is $1,600. Well, I will also refer Mike and anyone up in Phoenix dealing with high rents and cost of real estate to Thomas Sowell's book, Basic Economics. It's about high demand and the supplies not keeping up with it. That's where we're at. Okay? Yes, Matthew.
2 years from now, or whenever the market crashes, we're going to be doing the stories about there's a glut of houses on the market. It's just the way it goes.
Correct. And you know, it's the idea that there will be a point in time that we build too much, even in Maricopa, right? And we'll see how it all goes. I don't know. I want to know how we get water to all these people.
Correct.
That's what I love. We keep building zillions of more houses, and we keep saying Lake Mead's at extra low levels. And Tony Davis says desalination plants are the most evil thing in the world, and they don't work. So Tony, if we don't build a desal plant, what are we doing? And we don't have some sort of meteorological miracle of 28 inches of snow every day for the next 5 years. Where are we at?
Thank you.
Would you just say it, Tony. You would like people thrown out of their houses and leave. That's the only other thing you got.
Right.
That's why the star sucks. Another reason the star sucks. But back to how money walks. Let's go to the stats, right? This is what Schweiger, this is how adjusted gross income moves, right? So Arizona, over the last so many years, this is in the last 17 years, has gained $46.38 billion in annual adjusted gross income for the state. That's a lot of dinero, kids. All right? So here's the five states that Arizona gets people from. California, Illinois, New York, Minnesota, and the state of Washington. I'm going to tell you, those are five decently liberal states. So let's go to Tucson. Let's go to Pima County. This is the updated. These are the five counties that send us the most people over the last 17 years. We have Cochise County, right? San Bernardino County. Blue. Orange County, purple. Cook County, Illinois, way blue. And LA County, California, super blue. So what do you think was going to happen? Right? I got liberals. It's $5.5 billion worth of annual adjusted gross income has moved to Pima County over the last 17 years. From liberal communities. Where do you think's happening? What's going on? Why is this different? I mean, Maricopa County is $28 billion of adjusted gross every year has moved here from Maricopa. So check this out. Real quick. So Orange County, Cook County, LA County, Hennepin County, Minnesota, and you're going to love this. All you people will say, oh, there's, you know, $800 million a year of adjusted gross is from Pima County. That's moved up the road an hour and a half. Chris King coming up next. We got a situation, as we like to say. We got a situation here. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. All right. The day the music died, we're playing a little Buddy Holly. Only one big bopper. Matt thanked me profusely for not asking for Chantilly Lace. And now we got Richie Valance. Come on, let's go. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. First of all, good morning to Christopher King. He is a Vail school board member. How are you doing, sir?
Good morning, Chris. Doing well. How are you?
A little closer
today?
To that mic, young man. I want to hear that. There we go. Good right. morning, Christopher.
Good morning.
Who's this young lady sitting to the right of you?
This is one of our Vail School District parents, Miss April Sample.
Awesome. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Now, you were telling me the story. Chris told me a little bit before, but now I've heard more of the details of. And so just to give us a little bit of a preview, this is amazingly bizarre. And like we used to say, that old show, That's So Raven, That's So Pima County. That's what we got going here. So let's start. This has to do with your daughter,
mm-hmm.
who goes to a school in Vail, an elementary
Correct.
School. And so she had a migraine headache. Is that how this starts?
She had a migraine, so we went to pick her up from school, my husband did, and they had asked us if we received a call, and we said no. They told us that she had to be quarantined because she was considered a close contact.
Now, what does that mean? That she's
that
been
means
considered-
that there was a kid that tested positive in her grade, and she's in the middle school, so they're in. They go to several different classrooms.
Right.
So that means that one of the kids in her class tested positive, and so they pull the seating charts, and they figure out how close those kids were to each of them, and then they quarantine all the kids that were in that vicinity of that child.
Sorry, I'm just getting in. I'm laughing because I'm saying get a life in my in my brain right now. Sorry. All right, so they say she was in close contact, right? So the school sends you something, or they notify Pima County? Is that how this works?
The school actually sends us a letter stating that, and they have a letter that's attached from Pima County that states that it's highly recommended that you quarantine your child for 10 days.
All right, now hold that thought. Christopher, this is the protocol that's set up that the Vail is automatically a kid in close contact is, I hate to say this, ratting them out to the county?
Yes, that was actually, and that was actually power that was taken away from the district by the county.
Okay.
So that now the district actually has to report to the county.
And if you don't report to the county, what can they do to a district?
I have no idea, legitimately.
It's going to be your next thing to work on.
I'll work on it.
All right. So they say your child's in close contact due to seating charts, and they want you to do what?
They want us to take her home and quarantine her for 10 days.
And your response to quarantining your child for 10 days for a migraine was?
No. She was healthy, so I sent her back to school.
So when you say she was healthy, you got her tested.
Yes.
And she came out clean on the coronavirus.
Yes.
Okay. Did she have any other symptoms other than this headache?
No, but she has a history of migraines, so.
Okay, so this isn't just like a migraine that came out. This is something your child just suffers with.
Yes.
Got it. So then you send her back to school. Then what happens?
The afternoon I received a call from Pima County that was on Tuesday, and they said that I would be getting a letter. I said, okay.
Now, what did Vail School District do when your child returned to school?
They called me and told me that I needed to quarantine, and I told them that at that time we were told at a school board meeting that the school does not actually have the authority to quarantine our children. They can recommend, but they cannot require.
Christopher?
And that's correct. And the letter that's sent out says recommend.
Okay. All right. So they recommend that you quarantine your child, and you say, well, she's great just where she's at school.
Yes.
But you're going to get a quote letter.
Well, Pima County called me separate from the school and told me that I would get a letter from them.
Gotcha. Okay. So now, during all of this, your child's still at school?
Yes, she is.
Okay, good. Now, so how did Pima County, when they said they're getting this letter, we'll play a little comedy show. Did they mail it to you?
No.
Oh.
They did not.
Well, of course, with the mail here, everything goes through Phoenix. It would take 14 days to get here.
Yes.
So how did they attempt to get you this letter?
They came to my house on Wednesday night, and they knocked on my door probably between 5 and 6 times from what my son said within an hour. And we got home, and we pull into our garage. We go in, and the next morning I go out, and the letter is taped to my door.
And I have a copy of the letter in front of me right now.
Yes.
Now, this is almost redacted as much as a Dr. Fauci FOIA request, okay? So, now you redacted this because it has personal information.
Yes, it does.
All right. So the stuff that you redacted on this with your Sharpie, what is that information? Because this was sitting on the front door of your house for everyone to see.
It had my daughter's name on it with her birthday, her address, with my husband's and my name on it, and all those little marks are her name spread throughout the paper. And it was not in an envelope. It was taped exactly like that on my door.
So you got a little Hester Prynne scarlet letter on your daughter? Is that what they were attempting to do?
Yes.
What the hell's going on in this place? So what individual who was doing this? Was it like a process server or?
It was Pima County Constable's office.
And which constable was it?
Kristen Randall.
Kristen Randall.
The one that was named, yeah.
Okay. So she's knocking on your door while your kids are there. Then that doesn't work. So she tapes this thing with very sensitive information with a minor's information on it and name and just tapes it to your door.
Yes.
What a jackass. That's my words. So so I'm looking at this, and it's signed by the amazing Dr. Cullen.
Yes, it is.
What was the time frame of this? Was this just in the last couple of weeks?
This was back in November.
Okay.
November 2nd, I think it was November 3rd that it was actually delivered.
Gotcha. Okay.
But on November 4th, I actually called Pima County Health Department. I left a message for Teresa due to the fact that it was taped to my door without an envelope. And I left, and she was supposed to call me back on Friday because she was out of the office on Thursday. I did not hear back from her on Friday, so I left another message. At lunchtime on Friday, Pima County Health Department calls me and wants medical information on my daughter. So at that point,
Who called you for that? Do you remember?
It was just somebody at Pima at the health department that called me.
They said, "Hi, this is Randy from the health department."
Mm-hmm. And we need medical information on your daughter. And I refused to give them information just because I don't know who they are. And so I told them, I said, I've left two messages for Teresa Cullen. If she wants the information, then she needs to call me back. And to this day, I've never heard from her.
So now the interesting part is I'm saying, well, it's the day after Groundhog's Day, right? Right? Now there's another piece of paper here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what is this other? Let's see what time it is. Let's go to break. And there's another interesting piece of paper where April's family got a bill. So we'll talk about that when we come back with Pima County Tomfoolery Part 72,000. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Susanna Hoff and those other three persons. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. I didn't hear a word you said, so. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Christopher's trying to speak to me while I have Simon and Garfunkel yelling in my ear.
Nice.
Welcome back to Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Tomorrow will be fun. Dr. McCluskey will be here, of course, Captain Mayor Mayhem, Major Mayhem. We did give him a promotion. And then Juan from El Taco Rustico will be here. And Andy Biggs is also calling in. He wants to call in about some. He wants to impeach Biden, of course. That's one of the things he's kind of working the file on, as we say. We're hanging out with April Sample, concerned Vail mom who's fighting the power. Mm-hmm. And then we have Christopher King, Vail School Board member. Christopher, well, she's talking about this. What's happening at the school board level that possibly Vail could? Is there any will of this board to change what's going on in the relation to Ronas and fighting this crap at all? Or
the beautiful thing about the school board lately is the Rona hasn't been a key feature because we're trying to move past it.
Right.
Let the thing do kind of what it's, letting the virus.
Right.
So, and going on with the business of the district.
All right.
So, like, getting kids educated, reteaching, enrich, getting kids caught up to standard.
But there's not enough will on this board totally to go against Pima County on something like this.
I don't think so.
Okay. All right.
So.
All right. April. You got a bill, for God's sakes.
I did.
Was this also taped to your door, or did this come in the mail finally?
This actually only came on Friday.
So, just to what's really funny about this, the date on this invoice is November 12th.
Yes, it is.
Now, I know we have mail problems in Tucson. And I know it gets mailed to Phoenix, and then to Anchorage, and then it kind of comes back, right?
To Dubai.
But this is like 7 weeks later it gets mailed.
Yes.
Or more. Actually, it's more. So anyway, what's this invoice for? What does it say?
Pima County Constable's office is billing me for the delivery of that quarantine order and mileage.
Now, I love the mileage charge. $2.40 a mile.
Yes, $115 just for mileage.
I want to get that contract.
Oh, my
right?
Lord.
Federal, I think federal mileage is like 51 cents a mile.
This is a punishment mileage for you
exactly.
endangering the world with your child with their migraines.
Yes.
Crazy bastards. So I think one of the things I would do, I know you've been in touch with legislators, the AG's office, that's useless. I mean, hey, Mark Brnovich, this is just between me. You guys, you're out of this office. I'm just going to look over here at nowhere. Hey, Mark Brnovich, jackass, you're running for U.S. Senate, right? Angry mobs is what carried Glenn Youngkin to a victory in Virginia. Angry mob getting screwed over by Pima County getting a bill. When you get this, you tell your little jerk stores who work for you, hey, anything like this, you send my way, we're going to send this right to the front of the line. Ignoring angry school moms, Mark, is why you're Captain Nunchucks and not the Attorney General of Arizona. Stephen Christie, if you're listening, we will be reaching out to you for some assistance. So Steve really can't stand the way the county's been handling this junk, and I think this one's right up his alley. Mm-hmm. So hopefully Steve can be help. I think he can. Mm-hmm. So when you got the bill, what was going through your brain?
I kind of laughed at it, honestly, because they're trying to bill me for a service that I never even requested.
Oh. Well, again, your child was in the seating chart. Once that seating chart said your kid was in 12 feet of the kid who got sick, a danger to the planet.
Well, let me tell you, on that day, there was over 100 kids that they sent home for 3 cases of COVID.
And I've heard parents from other districts actually getting calls to quarantine their children because they were a close contact and the children weren't even present that day.
Mm-hmm. If I don't laugh, I'm just going to sob. Now, HIPAA, right? This privacy of your health information. Putting your daughter's health information up on the wall like Martin Luther banging the 95 Theses on the door of the church, that feels like a HIPAA violation to me, that anyone yes. could just walk up and read about your daughter, a minor's. I don't think anyone's going to help you, but is that another avenue here?
Yes, I've already filed a formal complaint on the HIPAA website, and I have contacted about 5 attorneys, but none of them are willing to take the case or can take the case because of a conflict of interest.
Because they're all doing work at the county? Again, I'm only laughing because I'll just sob. You know, I'm going to sob. I'm a grown man. Don't make me sob anymore on the air.
You know, you would think that the constable's office would have some form of a clue when it comes to, you know, potential issues with identity theft, since they are, you know, while they're working, they're considered law enforcement officers. And yet they post a minor child's information with date of birth and address, which gives everybody the information they need to come in and steal an identity.
Again, there's so many things wrong with this.
Mm-hmm.
Have you reached out to Kristen Randall?
I actually only talked to her on the day that I got that because there was a card on my door with her information on it, and it said they had more information. So I reached out to find out what it was, and she said, I apologize that I don't have any more information for you. She goes, I just ran out of business cards, so that's why I posted that card, just so you know who delivered it.
So Kristen Randall said she drove 48 miles to get to your house.
Yes.
Is this her district?
No.
Well, who's the constable in your district?
I honestly didn't even know there was a constable in Pima County.
I'm drawing a blank on the name.
But it's not her.
No.
Right, because she's center part of town.
Right.
So why the hell is Kristen Randall the one that's tasked with harassing this mother and her family? Well, I know she's resigning.
Yeah.
So, So they chose the one, what, is she the biggest virtue signaler? Is that why they
Probably.
Sent her? Right? But the idea that she had to drive 48 miles to deliver this stupid quarantine order based on your daughter's migraine. And now, the one thing, we've been talking about all the tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars Pima County has gotten in COVID funds.
Mm-hmm.
What's really weird for all of that, They did not have any money in the budget for a for an envelope, which is amazing. Right? I mean, this is what we're talking about. They could have put an envelope, shove it under your door. It's still a stupid thing to begin with. Okay? They shouldn't have been doing it in the first place.
No.
All right. But first of all, I want to thank you for standing up to jerk stores. I need more parents to stand up. So what's the next steps for you? What do you think?
Just trying to get Pima County to back off, because we have kids that are missing. We've had kids that have been quarantined 8 times, and they're crying because they just start to get caught up on their work, and then they're going back into quarantine, which means they're backed up again because not everybody can get to their work online during school.
Hold on. So a quarantine still 10 days, according to these jerk stores?
I think some of them are now 5 days, but then they have to wear a mask when they go back to school for another 5 days.
Okay.
But that's,
you know, my math is, right, 8 times 5, that's 40 days of learning. That's right. Massive.
And this goes back to that study that I was telling you about through ADE, the Arizona Department of Education, and Arizona State University, that says that kids need to be in the classroom to learn, because the majority of kids need that periphery knowledge to come in, because they're not going to make it.
And
so we're behind.
Yeah, and so many kids don't actually get sick. So they're being sent home on the – I used this at a board meeting last week. I said, so we don't go after people for crimes they may commit. So why are we quarantining kids on the basis that they might get sick? There's no logic in this. And our kids are the ones that are suffering. My daughter was out of school for 2 weeks. We were all sick. I kept her home. But I also was in touch with the teacher saying, hey, what work does she have? And I have to say, the teachers that my daughter has, I absolutely adore, because they're good at saying, hey, her work's on Schoology, go on, get it done. But a lot of those kids in our district do not have that opportunity. Their work is not on Schoology. So
right.
They're not able to get to their work until they get back. And then they have this whole ton of work that they're bringing home trying to get caught up on.
It's insanity.
And we've heard cases of, you know, kids being quarantined 3 times in a month. And that's not working for kids.
All right. We're going to take a quick comment from Charles Heller. Thank you for fighting. If you need to come on and ask and get the word out, please do so. All right?
All right.
Pleasure meeting you today.
Same here.
Christopher, thanks for bringing this to our attention.
Of course.
Let's go to Charles Heller on line 77. Charles, you're on with Chris, April, and Chris. What's up?
I just want to know if the school district is making sure to notify the Department of Education, who gives them the funds, of the absences due to quarantine of every single child, so that that can be deducted from the amount of funds that the school district is paid for children.
Right, because that's part of it, right? And mm-hmm. So this is why TUSD changed it, that if you're online, supposedly, that doesn't count as you're not at school,
because right.
they didn't want to mess with their dough.
Right, that butts and seats formulation.
But each individual person, when their child is quarantined, needs to report that to the Department of Education so that those funds can be deducted. And if people started reporting this to the Department of Education, and suddenly there's a rash of people who aren't in school in Pima County, and they start looking around, maybe that would make a change. Maybe that's one way to stick the tailpipe down the carburetor.
Well, I think April's in discussion with state legislators who could have that discussion, so... Maybe mm-hmm. something to add to the discussion. Charles, thanks for the nice call, sir.
Yep.
All right, April, keep on fighting. Love it. I need more pissed off parents to keep fighting like this. So thanks for standing up for your kids and actually for other kids. So
absolutely.
Keep on keeping on. Christopher, good to see you as always.
Good to see you, my friend.
Keep doing the good work.
Thank you, sir.
Tomorrow we have, we got Sean McCluskey, Major Mayhem, U.S. Congressman Andrew Biggs, and... The congressman of tacos and Mexican food, the great Juan Almanza, will be here.
The birria ramen is amazing.
It is amazing. He has a new business that he's starting, and he'll tell you about that also in the midst of the good food. So everyone have an amazing day. We'll see you in 21 hours. Make sure you listen to Hugh Hewitt, Dave Ramsey, and, of course, Mr. Prager on the way home. So wake up, Tucson.